Good afternoon. My name is Elisa Muntali, and I'm with the National Quality Forum. I'd like to welcome you to this conference call for the National Voluntary Consensus Standards for Patient Safety Measures. This is a follow-up meeting to the committee's initial evaluation in late October. During this meeting, the steering committee will review two medication safety measures related to HIV and two radiation safety measures. Following discussions of these measures, the committee will review the measure developer's modifications to four measures that were conditionally recommended in October. We would like to remind everyone that this call is open to NQF members and to the public, who will have opportunities at several points during the agenda to provide additional comments. Measure developers for all but the HIV medication safety measures are available to introduce the measures and to provide further clarification on the comments from the measures. Before we start today's work, there is some good news related to the HAI measures that we'd like to share with you today. Those who participated on the call on Tuesday learned that the CDC and the American College of Surgeons plan to meet on December 2nd and 3rd to discuss possible harmonization of their two SSI measures. The committee was reluctant to reach final resolution on those measures before the meeting. CMS has agreed with the committee's stance and has approved an extension of the deadline, barring that December 2nd meeting. NQF staff will be available to participate in that meeting, and we'll continue to keep you abreast of any new developments and of future meeting dates related to the HAI measures. And so with that, I'll turn it over to your co-chair, Dr. Bill Conway.
Thank you, Elisa. And we can open with the patient safety measure 2510, patients with HIV infection taking antiretroviral medications, serum ALT or AST test in the last 6 months. Is the measure developer on the line?
No, unfortunately, they will not be participating today.
Okay, that's fine. Then it looks like then Stephen Clark was our reviewer. Is he on the line?
I think he is.
Yes, I'm on the line. I think I was the secondary reviewer.
Great. Is Cynthia available?
She's not. She won't be attending today.
I think it's you, Stephen, if you could just say a few orienting remarks for the committee.
Okay. In terms of the core criteria that a measure has got to meet, feasibility, scientific acceptability, et cetera, I think that this particular measure does well with one exception that I have and one concern that I have. And my review is basically to bring this up as a clinician. I'm treating HIV/AIDS is not the thing I do every day, and so the concern I had may be obviated by other members of the committee who have the experience here. The measure proposers, I think, have demonstrated reasonably well from the literature that there is a gap, a performance gap, between the recommended transaminase measurement and what's actually happening. And 60-65%, I think, of patients, according to the literature presented, actually get the sort of screening which is recommended and which is outlined in this measure, transaminase value, in the last 6 months. The issue that I have with this for discussion is as follows. The more, as we found in some other in the perinatal arena, the more measures that are developed and adopted, the less impact any individual measure actually has. And so I think even though there are measures which are scientifically sound and represent good medicine, piling them on certainly has the potential to de-emphasize measures which are absolutely critical. So the question that I would raise and like to hear some discussion on here is in the big world of HIV/AIDS screening and treatment. I don't think the question so much is there a gap between AST, ALT in the past 6 months, what's recommended and what should be, and what's actually occurring. But I'm not sure there is data, at least I can't come up with data, suggesting that this is making a big impact on health. That is, are patients who are not receiving this sort of screening indeed suffering irreparable organ damage at an alarming rate, and is that organ damage is it permanent, and is it in fact decreasing either their quality of life or the life expectancy? If that is the truth, it's my impression that that's not one of the dominant issues in HIV/AIDS medicine. The number of patients not screened who are irreparably injured. And their lives are impacted because they didn't get the screen on time. If my impression is correct, then I think this measure takes on, even though it may be scientifically sound, its importance drops way down. And I guess I would be somewhat reticent to recommend it simply for the fear I mentioned earlier of piling on different measures, which would then maybe subtract from the importance of some other measures which are absolutely critical. So that's my one reservation about this measure, and I'm wondering what the committee thinks about that.
Great. Thanks, Stephen. Committee comments or questions?
Steve Lawls, I think you said it very well. It's my similar concern here with this.
This is Janet, and I would concur, Steve. We had similar discussion about the value of measuring CBCs and LFTs on rheumatoid arthritis patients as well. Is there evidence that not doing it will cause significant harm or improve mortality? And, you know, we concluded no on those measures. So similar issues.
Yeah, I would agree. This is Dan Solomon. I think it's exactly the same issue. It's a relatively, I guess I'm not an expert on HIV and heart, but I just would think that a lot of HIV patients do have other liver issues, whether that be hepatitis from viral infection. So I just I don't personally know the frequency of hepatitis and how heart impacts, liver function and how prevalent that is amongst the HIV population.
This is Iona. I support all that. I found that there was no evidence presented in the document on the incidence or the prevalence of adverse events related to the particular treatments that they were speaking about. They did a good work in terms of identifying HIV as a problem, but not the adverse events associated with medications that they're dealing with.
Great. Any other comments? Alisa?
Yes.
Should we do a straw vote on the measures of importance?
Yes, you should.
And after we do that, we would still have to officially vote on these later?
Correct, via SurveyMonkey.
So this just gives us an idea of where we stand right now.
What survey, Monkey?
Oh, that's online evaluation survey.
Oh, okay.
It'll be sent to you after this meeting.
Oh, okay.
Okay, then let me hear from the committee on the measure of high impact. How many would vote completely, partially, minimally?
Yes.
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 Yes. Anyone for not at all? Okay, so we have a minimal. The second importance criteria is the demonstrated opportunity for improvement. Was that demonstrated completely? Partially?
Yes.
Partially.
Two. Minimally?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. One more? Anybody for not at all? Okay. And on the evidence, would we have anyone voting completely on that? Partially? Minimally? Not at all?
Yes.
Yep. All of those. Okay. So then the final part of this criteria is, was the importance criteria met? That's a simple yes or no vote. How many on the committee would vote yes? And then how many would vote no?
No.
Okay,
so anybody abstaining? And, Elisa, how many do we have on the call?
We have 12, 13 members.
I didn't hear 12 responses.
I think they agreed with the majority, it sounds like.
Okay. So then we don't need to go further on these other criteria, correct?
Hello?
Lisa?
I think this is Heidi. I think you lost her, but yes, because you didn't pass importance, you don't need to go on. You're fine.
We'll just pass on the other criteria, and you'll send that around for the official electronic voting later.
Correct.
That would most likely not pass then, based on importance. The second measure for consideration is similar. It's patient safety measure 2610. It's the same HIV medication taking for CBCs measured every 6 months. And, Steve, would there be any additional unique comments related to the CBCs versus the first measure?
In my mind, no.
Okay, so it's a similar story. Is there anyone on the committee that would like to comment or add anything to this measure? Any questions about this measure? Should we move on and just check on the importance of this measure, do the straw vote? Somebody want to say yes?
Yes.
Hey, thank you. Okay. On the importance rating for patient safety measure 2610, how many on the committee feel that the importance was high impact was demonstrated for this measure? Those that feel it was completely demonstrated, partially demonstrated, minimally demonstrated?
Yes.
Several of those. Anyone not at all? Okay. And for the second question in this set, the demonstrated opportunity for improvement gap, was this demonstrated completely, partially?
Yes.
Three. Minimally?
Yes.
Okay, several more. Anyone for not at all? Okay. And the third question on the overall evidence, was those feeling that was completely demonstrated? Partially demonstrated? Minimally demonstrated?
Yes.
Okay. Anyone for not at all on that? Okay. Then on the overall rating of the importance criteria for measure 2610, again, the answer is yes or no. Those that feel that that was demonstrated, or that we met importance criteria, sorry, please, those saying yes, please signify by saying yes. Okay, those that feel that this was not demonstrated, please say yes.
Yes.
Okay, anybody abstaining? So the no's would carry that as well. So both of these measures don't appear to be supported based on demonstrating importance criteria. So at least on that set, you'll include this in the official electronic voting for everyone?
Yes, we will. And I think this might be a good time for a member and public comment.
Okay, that's very good. Open the lines.
And the lines are open.
Thank you. Do we have any member or public comment on the HIV measures? Okay. Thank you very much. Should we move on to the radiation dose measures? And we can consider a patient safety measure 4310. That would be participation in a systematic national dose index registry. Do we have the measure developer on the line?
Operator, is there a representative from the American College of Radiology?
No, there is not.
Okay. Is there a representative, is Rebecca Smith-Bideman on?
No, ma'am.
Okay. So none of the measure developers are available at this point, so we could possibly go through the measures that were conditionally recommended and go through the measure developer modifications.
Which one is that?
Conway.
Okay. So is that 10, 14, and 15, 16?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, sorry. We're having some technical difficulties with our phone. It appears that none of the measure developers for the dosing measures are available at this time, and so we could proceed to the measures that were conditionally recommended during your in-person meeting.
Okay. They may think we're not getting to that until 3 o'clock, Alisa?
I think so. We did call them earlier today to tell them that they may be up earlier on the agenda, but we have Jessica who's placing a call to them, so they may be able to join in the next few minutes, but in the meantime, we might be able to proceed to the next section.
Okay. So we would look at the measure 10, querying and counseling about anti-epileptic drugs, side effects.
Yes.
Is the measure developer on the line?
Operator, is anyone from the American College of the American Academy of Neurology on?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Is there anyone from the AAAHC Institute for Quality Improvement on the line?
No, ma'am.
Okay. So what we'll do, I think we'll be able to get some folks on, but what we can do is look at the document, and we can pull that up for you. We sent it to the co-chairs, and this is a side-by-side document that shows the steering committee's recommendations for modification on the four measures that were recommended and the developer's response. And I think most of them are very straightforward. And so, the developers were going to be here just in case you had further clarification. So we could possibly start that discussion.
Okay. We could start with the anti-epileptic drug. Does everybody on the committee have the side-by-side comparison?
No.
We're actually pulling it up on the screen.
Green? Okay, sorry.
Which email was it sent in?
That actually was just sent to the co-chairs initially, and we're going to share it today. So you probably haven't seen it. This will be the first time. And that's the document. So can everyone see? It's a Word document on the screen that has the measure ID and name and the measure developer's name and two columns that has the steering committee's questions and the developer's response.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not hooked in on my computer. I'm just on the phone.
Okay.
Go ahead anyway. Can you email it to me?
Sure.
Alan Levine, DC, @gmail.com.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, why don't we just pause for a minute and let people read through this, Alisa?
Okay. That sounds like a good idea. Or, Dr. Conway, we wouldn't mind also reading it out for the committee. It might make it easier. It's a little small on the screen.
Okay. Well, yeah. Why don't one of you do that? Good idea.
Okay, I'll just read out the. So here we've got, we had asked for the developer's response as follows. We had said, please provide specific examples to clarify what constitutes querying and counseling about anti-epileptic drug side effects. You may recall asking about that at the in-person meeting. So here is the developer's response on that topic. We accept any discussion of anti-epileptic drug potential side effects because there are too many different potential side effects for the many drugs available. Examples include, 1, general questioning with specific regard to side effects, for example, no side effects reported. 2, mention of side effects specific to a drug, for example, no hair loss or weight gain reported, or 3, a battery of questions as part of a scientific side effect inventory. After side effects are identified, then counseling should include mention of side effect severity or any action that is required. For example, mention that severity is so mild that no action needed, or mention that drug dose or type will be changed. That was their response.
This is Paul Szczesny. I have a question related to the definition of discussion, and there was, you know, from the world of EM, once again, we do a number of things that are either prompted or pre-prompted. So as I read this, if a physician were to survey patients via some electronic format that was secure, that would hit those targets, that as well might satisfy this measure. Therefore, it need not be a direct one-to-one communication. The method of communication or discussion is open to interpretation.
Does anybody on the committee have comment on that? We can, if the developers join us at some point, we can have them respond to that specific question. My impression from the in-person meeting was that they seem to think that that would qualify. That's
okay.
So we can.
I would agree. It sounds like that would be a sufficient query.
And this is Janet. I'm fuzzy on who this applies to. Was this specifically for neurologists only?
We did. That was actually another question, so we'll get to that in just a moment.
Okay. Thanks.
So, well, actually, I'm not sure if that specific question was addressed, but we had asked, well, we'll get to it in a moment, and we can address that issue shortly. So
is there any committee reaction to whether that response is adequate or specific enough?
Well, this is David now. I guess my thoughts on that are that in the end, this is driven off the CPT-2 codes. So as long as the physician checked a box saying that they feel they did it, it qualifies. So I guess, you know, their answer is appropriate because it's just going to be whatever the physician judges as being acceptable discussion or querying or counseling.
So the operative word in their response is any.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it very robust.
Right.
Yeah, this is Pete Law. Something, if the wording was something that pointed towards more robustness or specificity that it included would be better.
Yeah.
I think this is almost a circuitous discussion. I mean, I think at our meeting, the discussion was around the lack of specificity and the difficulty of really enforcing or interpreting this. Am I remembering that right?
Yes, yes. And I think it becomes particularly ambiguous if you're looking at the entire non-neurologist population. So every ER doc or hospitalist that sees a patient who's on an anti-epileptic, is that the expectation or is it specific to neurologists? I think if it's specific to neurologists, maybe it's operational to some degree, but I don't think it's feasible or usable.
Was that this was developed for neurologists to participate in PQRI and other P4P initiatives. So I think that was the intent.
I recall that as well.
Mm-hmm. This is Alan Levine. I want to go back to something we said earlier about the importance of the, I think it was the first measure we talked about. Someone made a comment about relative to other measures relating to that particular measure, I guess in the HIV world, it didn't seem to rise above it and maybe would end up diminishing some of the others. And I had a concern coming out of the meeting in October about, you know, as you increase the number of endorsed measures, what happens to the NQF brand? I mean, that's more global, but it gets to the point of, I mean, what if someone wanted to come in with a proposal that there'd be discussion with, you know, internists and their patients about taking an anti-inflammatory drug and their stomach situation? I mean, where do you draw the line in terms of some of these things that should you know, so sort of just as a matter of clinical practice be done anyway? Having to establish a special performance measure for it seems, I don't know, sort of, in this particular case anyway, maybe not all that important, at least in my mind. It's something that should be done anyway rather than having an external factor that or measure that drives it. I mean, it just seems a good medical practice. Maybe I'm missing something, but it just seems to be such a basic part of the clinical practice that why do you need something special to force it?
This is Iona. I guess I'm coming from a similar position in that asking a patient about any side effects who are related to the drugs that they're on seems to me like it's part of the care that's already being delivered, unless there are physicians out there who don't ask that question. And whether it's documented or not documented, I mean, is this measure just looking, is this measure really just only going after whether or not the physician has documented that he's asked that question or she's asked that question?
It seems like we could describe every aspect of medical care in this sort of a measure.
Yes.
And so it seems absurd almost to endorse such a measure.
Thank you.
So we've already got too many thoughtless checkoff boxes in healthcare.
Yeah, this is not going to improve care.
So, I mean, thinking a little bit out of the box, if you were really wanting to improve that component of care, whether or not a patient has been, whether or not side effects of a medication, that information is being made available in the patient-physician interaction, to me, the better approach would be to, which doesn't relate to this indicator, but it's about teaching patients to disclose their problems. And patients who are having miserable experiences on medications will either tell their physician or they'll stop taking the med.
Yeah.
And Iona, Janet, it gets back to that fundamental question that we talked about at the face-to-face meeting and that sort of continuum between clinical practice guidelines and what a neurologist or a surgeon should do and be held accountable to versus, you know, a measure that reduces harm or, you know, you know, as Alan says, you know, it has huge impact. Like, if you don't do this, the harm or the impact will be significant.
And it's back, again, we're the patient safety steering committee. We're not the quality improvement steering committee. I think this is a nice quality improvement measure that a practice group could use to verify that their, you know, the practice behavior is there. But from a patient safety perspective, I just don't think it has the kind of weight that it needs for it to. Yeah, I see patient safety as having, you know, as you already articulated, it's about harm, creating harm. And not asking a patient about their side effect and checking a box, to me, does not create harm. It may be poor documentation. And if you're not asking that question and the patient's not telling, then you've got a poor relationship.
And the unintended consequence of more and more of these measures is actually distracting people from doing the work that they need to do to actually prevent harm. Then you get busy with auditing and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
At our live discussion, didn't the committee vote to move this measure forward, provided that we got adequate responses from the measure developer? But it seems as though we're kind of taking a different direction now.
And perhaps that's because the response we're saying is not, I guess,
adequate.
It's not specific.
I would agree with that last statement.
Sorry.
So we asked for three things. It sounds like, is there anyone that would say the response was to this question was adequate? Okay, so we're not really endorsing or accepting that response.
Minimal.
Yeah, minimal.
Well, just let me just get clarification. And as I'm rereading the response, in clinical care, when a symptom or a problem does not exist, it's charting by exception, right? So you would only write down in your chart, you would only make a note in the chart when there was a side effect, when there was a problem that was presented. So even in the way that this is worded, this is changing, and I get that documentation and electronic medical records are trying to change some of the documentation problems. But by indicating no side effect reported is a change in the charting practice as well.
Right. We had two other requests.
Yeah, I can read those off for you if you like.
Okay.
All right. So the second request was to clarify whether the measure is applicable to both primary and secondary diagnoses of epilepsy or only to encounters with a primary diagnosis of epilepsy, with the note that the steering committee had recommended that the measure be applicable only to primary diagnoses. So the measure developer's response was as follows. The measure is applicable only to a primary diagnosis of epilepsy. The appropriate change to the denominator statement has been made to limit the eligible patients to those with a principal, in parentheses, primary diagnosis of epilepsy. A definition of principal diagnosis is also included with the measure specifications per the recommendation from the AMA PCPI. And then that was their response.
Oh, that sounds like a pretty crisp yes to the request.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And how about the third one?
Okay, the third was the steering committee requested that the measure be expanded to include services provided by physician extenders, such as advanced practice nurses, clinical pharmacists, and other advanced care providers. The measure developer's response to that was, it is acceptable to include other types of providers in this measure. The appropriate change has been made to include the physician extenders under eligible clinicians in the NQF endorsement application. So again, a fairly...
Well, that's a pretty crisp yes as well.
Yeah.
So what we have then is a measure at our live meeting that we conditionally endorsed, and one of the three requests wasn't adequate. What do we do?
I would suggest that we wait until the measure developer is able to join us on the call. I think she'll be able to join us probably around the time we initially scheduled, because you did have some specific questions for her. I think it would be fair to them to respond to those directly. And maybe we can then proceed to one of the dosing measures where we're trying to restructure the schedule because people are not available. We've moved quicker than we anticipated we would. And we do have measure developers for the PSM-044-10, the radiation dose of computed tomography measure. So we can move to that one. The developer is here, so we can have discussion on that.
Okay. Thank you. So let's see. Rebecca Smith Feynman is with us. You there?
You would have called in on the public line.
Operator?
Yes.
Is Rebecca Smith-Bideman on?
I don't see her on the line. If you're on the line, Rebecca, please press star, then zero.
We see her on the webinar, but we don't think
she's actually dialing in now, so she'll be joining us momentarily.
Okay, great.
Jessica?
Yes.
Hello?
Hi, Rebecca.
No,
yes.
This is...
Oh. Hi.
Rebecca's line is in conference and now open.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rebecca?
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Rebecca, would you introduce this measure to the committee with a brief summary?
Absolutely. Can I introduce my name too first? So I am, my name is Rebecca Smith-Beinman. I am a radiologist at UCSF, and I'm a researcher that's been focusing on trying to come up with ways to understand and lower radiation dose associated with medical imaging. And I have a sort of a couple of minute introduction to the measure. You guys have just finished, I think, discussing the dose registry measure?
No, not yet.
Okay. So just as a background, radiation, ionizing radiation in particular, is an extremely well-known and very well-studied carcinogen. There's probably no better studied carcinogen out there. And radiation for medical imaging, it turns out, is absolutely in the range where carcinogenesis has been demonstrated. And the radiation for medical imaging is much higher and much more variable than people are generally aware. So the high doses and the variation are particularly striking for computed tomography, where patients can basically undergo the same test, but if they go to a different facility, that dose they receive can be 20-fold or greater difference, even on the same day of the week, depending on when they go. So doses are higher and more variable than people are aware, and the exposure to CT has really risen dramatically, sort of increasing patients' exposure in general. So about 15 years ago, about 5 CTs were obtained per year per 100 patients, and now about 25 to 30 CTs are obtained per 100 patients per year. So the number of patients who are exposed is pretty high. And despite how many people who are undergoing CT, there's remarkably little information known about what doses patients typically undergo. And part of the difficulty in collecting these data is that there's been very little done to come up with consistent measures and metrics that people agree are the ones we should collect. So recently we've done that, but before that, there was so much arguing about what data we should collect that no one collected anything. And having a metric that people agree on has started to make it easier to collect dose data. And so having National Quality Forum come up with endorsement of a single measure of radiation dose related to CT, I think could have a profound effect on quality. It would sort of allow facilities to start collecting and comparing their dose, and that, just as a first step, would go a long way towards improving so-called dose awareness. Hospitals and facilities could know what doses they're actually using, and then they could start to look at them. They could assemble their doses. They'd allow facilities to identify who's getting doses higher than they should be, whether the doses they use at their facility compare with those that are used at other facilities, whether within acceptable ranges. Having a single metric would allow facilities to start sharing their doses within geographic areas, nationally, and I think it would start to allow some healthy competition on trying to lower doses. If you know what your doses are, you can start to lower them. I think that if facilities also began collecting these data, they could voluntarily share them with central quality improvement organizations so we could start generating so-called diagnostic reference levels, target levels, and then people could try to achieve those levels. The specific measures that I've proposed in this have been endorsed by the FDA, have recently, as in a few weeks ago, been enacted into law in California where these dose data will have to be incorporated into every patient's medical record by 2012. So these are not sort of spurious measures. These are the measures that are out there. At the time I submitted this measure several months ago, I was personally not ready to step up to the plate to serve as a central data repository for such information, but I'd be willing to do so at this point if no other organization agrees. The measure that I've put forth, which I'm happy to answer any questions about, is extremely simple. It can be used and applied by any facility that does CT at really minimal, trivial cost. And I submitted several letters of endorsement for the measure. Dr. Morin, who I think is on the call for the American College of Radiology, submitted a letter of support. Dr. Bushberg from UC Davis, who leads several committees on the National Council of Radiation Protection, and Dr. Shuren at the FDA, who runs devices in radiological health, have all submitted endorsing words for the metrics. It is an extremely simple measure, and I believe that it gets at precisely the kind of information that patients want to know about, but there's a lot of nuance in
possible weaknesses of the measure, and I've tried to describe under Section 4D why I think, in fact, the simplicity of the measure really gets at what patients want, but it is a little bit nuanced, and so I'm happy to explain that in greater detail if people are interested. So in summary, the measure I put forth is really simple. It has two parts to it. One collects dose information, and the second part records whether or not that dose information is recorded in the medical record, and I think both could lead to a really rapid improvement in quality.
Great. Thank you very much. Are there questions from the committee?
Hi, Anna.
Go ahead, Anna.
At the beginning, you mentioned the registry. This is to Dr. Smith-Blindman. You mentioned the registry. Is she there?
I'm here. I'm not sure what you mean I mentioned the registry.
At the beginning, you said... You thought that we had just finished talking about the registry?
Yes.
Okay. So the question I had is, how does this measure relate to the registry? Do you know?
Yes. Both measures are trying to get at the same thing, which is to collect information about what is currently happening in clinical practice. The ACR dose registry is by doing it by having facilities directly send the dose information to a central repository. And I think there are some fabulous advantages to that, which I thought I was coming after Dr. Morin. So it allows getting the kind of information that I'm suggesting you collect. The problem with it for me, the weakness of it, is that it's pretty complicated to start getting that information. So the information is not readily available to be sent. The metric that I have requires someone to review some information on a terminal, and you can write down the information and you got it, where there's a whole lot of fancy software, connectivity issues, HIPAA privacy issues that have to be overcome, as well as data standardization issues to centralize the data from every facility in the U.S. So I think it's a great way to start. One potential weakness is it's not that generalizable and has pretty big upfront costs. The only second issue that I would raise, which I'm not really the right person to address, but is I'm not sure to the degree to which there'll be population reporting from data from the National Dose Index Registry. So I'm not sure how long it will take them to get up to speed to have enough data to share standards, and I'm not sure if that data will be publicly made available so that me as a patient can know what I'm getting if I go to a particular facility. So I think those would be the two biggest differences between the measure that I understand it from the dose registry and the one I'm proposing. I think if you guys had the power at the National Quality Forum to require everyone who does CT in the country to comply and participate in the National Dose Index Registry, I'd say that would be fantastic, and I would fully endorse that.
Thank you.
Rebecca, this is Paul Nanji. I have a couple questions for you.
Okay.
So I have a usability question for you. I understand CTDI, vol, and DLP, and you're asking this metric for it to be in the final report. Ideally, we'd like to be able to, you want this to be part of a patient educational process. If it's going to be in the final report, the referring physician is going to read it. They're going to have to share that with the patient. You chose not to use lifetime attributable risk.
So, the question is, what information should be conveyed to patients? And there are lots of levels of information that can be conveyed to patients. I think that what I've proposed is the simplest, most concrete, and I agree with you, in some ways not easily understood measure by the patient or the ordering physician. And the reason it doesn't have a measure in there is because there's been, I think there's a lot of concern within the radiology community that we're not trying to panic our patients and create sort of an environment of fear where every time they need to go for an x-ray, we tell them how much harm that could cause. So this felt like a little bit more neutral measure. This is the dose that you received, and clearly there needs to be a whole lot of work at various levels to explain what this information means. And so what, yeah, I'm certainly interested in the kind of numbers that you're talking about in terms of the risk. I'm certainly more than happy to present them in my publications, but I'm not sure that this form would be the easiest to sort of convey that level of complexity. So this is basically saying it's more of a documentation of what was received, as if you got this immunization or you had this screening exam, but doesn't give all of the back-end information about the benefits and harms that might come with it.
And I totally understand. I think that I guess the question I have is really the usability question. It's hard to interpret these metrics outside of the if you're not interested in radiology. But in your metric, you asked for this to be part of the final report. But as part, I think this is more of a quality improvement method where you can try to reduce your protocol variation. And even in your metric, you're actually having them look at the dose through the PAC system, which is the radiology version of an EMR, which allows for faster data collection. So what is the added value of them putting it in the final report and taking that extra step as a radiologist when, for your data collection, is already being done in the PAC?
So I think just to make sure everyone gets the question is where should this information live? Should it live in the radiology realm, or should it live in the realm of the people who order the tests? And I think there are several goals. One is by having to document it in this way and having it become part of the patient's record where it can be assessed, I think is a pretty good incentive to try to improve it. So you may not know exactly what 50 means, but 40 is better and 30 is even better than that. So getting it out there, it also then permits tracking of this information over time, which I think is a really crucial piece, not really addressed by my metric, but there's a subset of the population who gets repeated imaging to a degree that's pretty hard to believe. And if this is only within the radiology piece, that can't as easily be tracked, where if it gets into the electronic medical record that's outside of the radiology piece, then it can easily be tracked over time so that this information could be used to influence the further use or choice of tests. So if the emergency room physician pulls up a patient and sees that they've had 9 exams for this indication over the last year, they could either decide to defer the CT altogether, to replace it with an MRI, or to actually sit down and examine the patient before they order the next test.
This is Bob Bundy. Did I speak over somebody, or do I have the floor?
I think you got it.
Go ahead, Bob.
Well, thank you. Rebecca, I'm Bob Bundy. I work with WellPoint. So just as a point of disclosure, we do have a subsidiary called AIM, American Imaging Management, which does a lot of patient safety-related activities with radiology dosing procedures.
Yeah.
Has Rick joined the call yet?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Hi, Rick. You don't know me, but I hope you just heard my little brief intro. What I did to prepare for this call, I actually called one of my colleagues at AIM because I had some questions about Rick's presentation. My background's in laboratory science, so a lot of this made sense to me, but I wasn't sure about the details. And in talking to AIM, they had probably more articulate questions than I had that I just wanted to bring up to you. Some of them have already been addressed, and one of them obviously is what is the end result? You're not aware of this, but at one of our previous NQF meetings, we talked about generating numerators and denominators, and that's fine. And there's an inherent belief that going from 50% compliance to 95% compliance is good, but what does compliance equal? Is it less readmissions, less ER visits? So with this, if we're trying to lower the dose, what is the end result? And is this duplicative at all of any existing ACR educational programs? Because I really couldn't figure out whether the purpose was to gather this data and then explain the data to the radiologists, or gather the data and get it back to patients, or gather the data and try to decide if the issue was at the RadTech level with the way they actually enter the dosing into the instrument. So there's some ambiguity about what is the end result and how are we going to do this. I like the idea. I like the concept. One of the things that I also had a question about was you talk about, if I read it correctly, automatic data capture, but you also mentioned manual capture of data. I'm not sure how successful you'll be with manual. Getting people to agree to automatic is hard enough. You also had a slide, and I feel like I'm stealing part of your presentation, but you had a slide in there that talked about the different machines and how many pilot studies you've done on the different machines. Can you give us some idea of what percent of machines in existence this would apply to? Is it 10%, 90%? If a machine is over X years old, are they automatically excluded? I mean, how up-to-date do you have to be? Is it 1 year, 2 years, 5 years? And also the other thing is, you know, what AIM looks at is the number of procedures, and that is one measure. For example, I think Rebecca just said if you've got five procedures or nine CTs, you know, that's obviously more risky than one, especially if it's a CT of the chest, you know, and you know all the conversions for those. That's just one measurement, because we know that one CT does not equal another CT. It varies upon machines and locations and all of that. So there's so many variables. Our data is good, but it's not as granular as it could be. I think this is possibly the next step. But with all that being said, very quickly.
I don't know if those questions, I think I can address all of those questions, but I don't know if they're addressed to me or Rick.
They're addressed to both. That's why I asked if Rick was on the call, because
okay.
I wasn't sure. I feel like I'm stealing some of Rick's presentation, but it also dovetails with what you're discussing as well. So
I jotted down those questions and could run through them. So I think the first question you asked was, who's the audience for this information? And I'd say there's quite a number of stakeholders who are very interested in these results. So I would start at the level of radiology groups who, quite honestly, currently don't know the doses they're using. They are not well informed at how to collect the dose information or what to do with it. So we've had several projects that have involved several different institutions, and I can quite honestly say the radiologists have been uniformly excited and collaborative and cooperative in giving us information, taking the information back, and using it quite immediately to lower doses. By doing that, they've gotten rid of high-dose protocols, and they've tweaked the lower-dose protocols to make them lower. So radiologists are clear. Parties who would be interested in this, and we're sort of saying, okay, here's a common framework, let's all use it. So radiologists are interested, but then absolutely sort of the health plans, which I'm using broadly to mean all the people who order the tests, the primary care docs, the specialists, the family practice docs, are absolutely interested in this information, and this provides a way that they can meaningfully interpret it and look at the dose, let's say, from year to year. I'll get to in a minute what they do with that information, but clear recipients and really interested. And then lastly, patients are incredibly interested in this information. They want to know if they go to facility X, let's say that facility is Cedars-Sinai in L.A. or Huntsville, Alabama, that their chance of getting radiated as if they had a brain tumor is actually really low, not really as high as it might see by seeing the press, or that they go to a facility that gives them consistently doses that are much lower. So I think radiologists, every other physician you can imagine, and patients are all really interested in this information. I think in terms of, you know, what we're trying to do in terms of setting standards, the first step is to collect this information. And what I was offering to do is to say I'm willing to step up to the plate and create a essentially free service that would provide summary statistics on the differences between facilities and different types of exams that would allow the information to be presented in a consistent format. Once you have those data, you can start to set standards. Usually those standards are set at some level. don't be above this level, and those are often said, the 75th percent letter, don't be in the highest quarter of facilities. But I think there are lots of ways to get at how you use this information to set standards. The three groups that I had letters of endorsement for, I would hope would all be willing to be recipients of these data to collect standards. So the FDA, the National Council on Radiation Protection, and the ACR. And I would support any of them becoming the quality holders of this data. But I was just putting out there that I'd be willing to do it. And I've spoken to some computer people who would help me with the skill set I don't have. So I think there are interested parties. I think it's very clear how these data could be used. You asked about how this information can be collected automatic or manually, and I can say that we've collected information on tens of thousands of patients and have collected that information manually using automatic data transfer, using sophisticated software that extracted the information, and using optical readers where the information was pulled off of the images. And so I have a pretty good amount of experience of all the different ways of doing it. And the simple truth is, if I wanted to do it at my institution, the easiest way for me to do it would be to sit down and write down the numbers, and that would take me about an hour to write down the numbers for an entire month of exams. Maybe not a month, maybe an hour for a week of exams. So, I think manually is a perfectly good way to go and probably an easy way to go. I think automatic for facilities that are really sophisticated, who have all the new GE machines that let you automatically export the standard dose report, that's a good way to go. But part of the reason I was willing to submit this metric is I learned a little bit about National Quality Forum metrics, and I realized, oh, the metric can be pretty easy. You can open the medical chart and see if an aspirin was subscribed, and that's a good way to do it. And that sort of, actually, after being on an NQF panel, I realized, oh, it doesn't have to have this automatic data transfer that the National Dose Index Registry would require. I mean, that's good. I'm in no way critical of it. I think it's great. But it also could work by just writing it down. In terms of which machines would work for my metric, it's a little bit different than the one that Dr. Morin has. But currently about 95% of machines will output information that will get the information in the format that I've proposed. And that's based on an FDA survey from about 5 years ago. So very few wouldn't qualify for that. The automatic dose transfer is much more difficult. And then lastly, I actually know, Bob, pretty well about the work that you do about collecting dose information. And I think number of procedures is certainly better than no information. But given the dose can vary so profoundly for the exact same kind of study, I think we need to start looking at real doses that patients are exposed to rather than the hypothetical doses, which I should say in general are estimated at really, really low levels compared to what they turn out to be in actual practice.
It's Bill Conway. Could I find out, are you and ACR measuring radiation dose differently?
So I can mention, this is Paul Nagy. No, they're both taking the same measures from the CT scanner. So CT scanners measure the CTDI volume and DLP. Those are both, those are the same quantified metrics of the energy per kilogram per centimeter that's exposed to the patient. I guess the difference is really in how they acquire it, the process.
This is Steve Law. Do you want to say, Dr. Conway, I'm sorry, are you done?
Yep. Well, is there a difference?
The difference between the two metrics?
Yes.
I would say that I think Rebecca mentioned one of the differences is I think we should let Rick have a chance to present his metric, but they also go with the registry also includes a lot more other dimensions like the kilovoltage and the MAS and more granular metrics that can affect your protocol variation. I think Rebecca did a great job even in her application describing some of the other confounding factors that could, even with a high DLP or a high CTDI vol, it might not necessarily be that it was an aberrant procedure. It might be it was a large patient or it had other factors that affected the dose.
Yeah. But, Paul, you reviewed both of these. What I'm trying to figure out is what the real difference between these are. Is it more about reporting who gets the number, or is it more about how we measure the dose?
It's not about how we measure the dose.
Okay.
I would agree.
So we're looking at different reports. One goes to a registry, the other goes to a chart.
This is Rick Moore. If I could just clarify something, we don't measure dose. We haven't measured dose for years and years and years. We measure a dose. We are able to gather a dose index. So what's terribly important to understand here is we can't tell the patient necessarily exactly what the patient got, not yet at least. And so it's a misnomer to call it dose. It's a dose index. But what it could do is if you know what yours is, and since it's measured the same way on all other machines, then if you knew what the national average was for a head CT without contrast, you would know if you're 3-4 times higher or 6 or 7 times less. And so it's a relative issue. It's not an absolute quantity.
Rick, you said it's not a dose. Is it an exposure, or is there another better term for it?
It's an index that's related to the amount of radiation that was measured by a radiation detector in a circular piece of plastic.
Just to say two things. Whether or not there's a certain amount of radiation that comes out of the machine, and the detriment of that radiation has a lot to do with who's in the machine getting that exposure. And so if you put an infant in the machine versus a very large patient in the machine, the radiation detriment, the harm, the cancer risk, what happens to them as a result of that will vary profoundly. But so there's a lot of arguing about what the measure should be, but these, I think, we're measuring an amount of ionizing radiation that's coming out of the machine, and there are lots of problems with precision. I mean, my summary of the difference is how these data get out of the medical facility and how the results get back to the medical facility in terms of influencing care. I think that's the biggest difference, not so much whether it goes to a computer database or a paper database. Ours would go to a computer database as well. It's just where the information, how the information comes out, and there's a big difference in how the information comes out in terms of the complexity and generalizability, and then whether that information gets back to the public. And I think that's the biggest difference. I think as Paul said, the data that the National Dose Index Registry are collecting are definitely more granular. So I think you get it on fewer patients, but you get a little bit more information.
Dr. Boonman, this is Lisa Thiemann. I have a question about your measure in comparison to ACR's measure, data registry measure. Now, at the beginning of the call, you had put on the table that you'd be willing to serve as the repository, I'll call you for lack of a better word, of the collection of the person who would be able to collect the data from multiple facilities and then push that data back as well, very similar in nature to what the ACR data registry concept is. The issue with the proprietary database, we'll get to those discussions when we actually consider PSM-043, because I don't want to blur the lines and create further confusion here since we're considering your the performance measure 044, your performance measure. But how would you contemplate going about that? Serving as that repository.
So I would hope that wouldn't be part of my, whether you like my answer to this, whether you like my metric, but as part of the research project that I'm currently pulling together, we've been collecting dose information from 10 integrated health systems, hundreds of facilities. And we've made a lot of progress in that since I submitted that metric, which is why I'm more willing. And basically, the information that I'm suggesting we collect is pretty darn simple. So I would basically create a non-profit corporation that this information would come into and leave from. It would be based at UCSF. I'm convinced I have the capacity to do it because of this experience of collecting dose information across these hundreds of facilities. And it would basically be a way that for a trivial amount of participation fee, facilities, you know, would have to be willing to have their information be shared, but they could get this information and have it then be used to create sort of normative data. And I've been approached, I will say, by about a half dozen companies that are interested in sort of my participating in their efforts, and I realized I've got the expertise, it's trivial, and I'd be willing to do that because I'm not sure how else to have these information be readily available and provided back to the public. So, you know, people cannot currently learn about the dose they've undergone. Medical facilities won't share it readily. Facilities don't know how they're doing, and radiologists don't know how to facilitate. And we've been giving that information back now to lots of facilities, and they've just been really grateful and have changed practice because of it, and I don't think it's that complicated to do.
This is Steve Wallace. I have two questions and a comment, if it's okay. One question is, you cut off your children.
Who is this? I'm so sorry.
Steve Lawless from the Moors. One question was, you cut off your age at over its age categories or size categories, and then over 15 is just treated as an adult. And I would think that's shortchanging size because the difference of a 5 kilo versus a 10 kilo versus a 15 versus a 60 kilo is huge. So I'm curious why you increased over, why 15 kilos is the adult size.
So I think totally valid question. The reason for using so many smaller categories for children is this is what's been endorsed by several international radiation protection groups, and the size cutoffs I chose particularly were those that are used. And in children in general, this information is contained within the medical record and medical order data system. So if a child is going for a CT scan, they have to get intravenous contrast, their weight is provided to determine how much contrast they should get. So the weight information is readily available in children in comparison to adults, and 15 is generally for those standard used as an adult. And thus, it's not that I wasn't interested in having more granular categories. I think it would be great. But in order to get that information adds another level of complexity that takes us out from being a simple process where I could get all that data in an hour to literally being a 40-hour process to get that data. So we're getting it in our research work, and I can tell you it, the data are not linked to the radiology record. So I get the dose, and it's almost impossible to know. And so the rationale is that if patients in general have a relatively equal size distribution in some area, you know, in the south there's one distribution of weight, and in the north it's another one, I think on average the distribution of dose will balance out.
I have concerns over that. I have concerns over your logic on it, nothing else.
Why my logic?
Size difference and body surface area difference of a 15 kilo versus a 40 kilo versus 60 are significant. And if the radiation ionizing doses and absorption, I just look, size is just there.
One, the data is not available. And I will say that, so there is no data on weight linked to the radiology results. So I get dose and there's no way to get weight. And for facilities to get that information is really hard. So it's a weakness there in that the data is not available. But I will say that in every other radiation protection program in Canada, in the UK, in Germany, in France, in Spain, in Italy, in Japan, they ignore weight. And in several of those countries, they suggest if you have really big patients, you just don't count that case.
Okay. The other question I would have is, why isn't this just part of the American College of Radiology hasn't endorsed this as a maintenance of certification type process? It would seem to me that while some of this is working out, why not have this endorsed or go direction of maintenance of certification that somebody would study this for their board recertification, rather than having it as a research extension on the National Quality Forum?
I don't think there's any research extension in this, actually, for the National Quality Forum. I mean, I wouldn't characterize it that way. I'm certainly involved in efforts through the American Board of Medical Specialties, which has to do with precisely what you're talking about. So I'm on this committee for the American Board of Medical Specialties, American Board of Radiology, American College of Radiology, Physician Consortium for Performance Improvement. This group called the Patient Radiation Dose Work Group. And their goal is to put forth a metric to the National Quality Forum in about 2 to 3 years that looks at radiation dose. And they're not really so interested in this level of data collection. So I have tried through that forum and have contacted the American College of Radiology directly about being interested in collecting this these data, and they're quite honestly not interested.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Rebecca. We have a couple of reviewers on the committee. Paul Nagy, do you have additional comments on 4410?
I think I've put together most of my comments. I've already communicated them.
Okay. Thank you. Lisa?
Thanks, Dr. Conway. I do have one other further question, Dr. Binman, just from it appears that your measure would be applicable across all patient care settings, and I think it was the listing for for the anatomical area of head, chest, abdominal, abdomen, pelvis, and lumbar spine. You went into discuss, you know, emergency room, office space, and so forth. But I just wanted to, were you also contemplating that this would be used or reported by those providers who provide interventional pain, who may use CT for interventional pain procedures as well?
So,
or is this for diagnostic purposes purely?
So, I entirely thought about this as for diagnostic purposes, and the categories that I chose were ones that make up the bulk of imaging studies that are done in the U.S. So and they're done by all specialists. So it goes across specialties. An example that you just gave is sort of an interventional CT procedure, and it's a relatively uncommon procedure. And I think standards for conducting those exams, you know, probably need a much greater level of nuance than can be provided by this kind of across-the-board metric.
I would agree with you on that. My perception of the use of CT in that population is very small. And so would it be worthwhile to put an exclusion in this measure then for understanding of at the local level if this were to pass? So once it's implemented at the local level.
I think it should probably include within each of those categories interventional procedures done with the use of head CT or abdominal CT or pelvic CT. I think that would be a good clarification.
So interventional or diagnostic? I just want to make sure that I hear that I'm...
Both, actually. So anything where it is a procedure that involves a catheter that's being manipulated for treatment or diagnosis is very, very different and should be excluded.
Okay.
So I'm broadening my exclusion from what you said.
Right.
And you know, there's another category which I didn't exclude, but just to raise it in case you wanted to, is for patients who get radiation treatment. There are a lot of protocols out there which have daily CT imaging exams to go with the daily radiation treatment, which I was surprised to learn about, but, you know, we sort of found it while I was exploring the data. And so those might be another exclusion because those are, I thought they should be counted, but it's another thing where it's different than basic diagnosis. It's really treatment planning.
Yeah, so would you be willing to amend those exclusionaries, exclusionary section?
I'm drafting them as you're talking, absolutely. I can email them before we're done. I think they're both good exclusions.
Okay.
This is Iona from Utah, and I have two comments to make. One is that the simpler measure, as described, has a little more appeal in our state because of our rural hospitals that we have, and the idea that if there isn't an automated way to download that information, that you can capture the information manually and go ahead and enter it. So I just wanted to make that comment from a diversity perspective in terms of urban and rural. But then the other side of that coin for me is that I'm a little bit nervous about the fact that there isn't a core infrastructure in place. As you described, you'd have to start a nonprofit organization in order to actually set up a registry to collect data, et cetera. So it becomes more of an independent, collaborative kind of opportunity as opposed to something that's has a more national presence. So I just wanted to put those two points of view out there, and as I'm sort of thinking through the benefits and the downsides of either the registry and or this measure as proposed.
Can I just address the latter concern, which is when I originally submitted the metric, I sort of asked if it's required to have the metric be ready for quality reporting. And I was told specifically that clearly is the end goal, but that doesn't need to be the initial endorsed metric. So I think by having this metric endorsed, so a facility, if some group endorses this metric and that a facility is underneath them has to follow it, it would be incredibly beneficial to the individual facility to look at these data without in any way sharing them with any other facility. So they would see how their numbers, the head CT, compares to enough normative data that already is out there. So it would be incredibly beneficial. I think it would be highly desirable to extend it, to make it nationally reported or reported at the state levels. And there is a state radiation protection group in every U.S. state that deals with oversight. And so those would be immediate groups that would be interested in reporting it. And as I said, the groups that I approached, the FDA and the NCRP, are both willing, if this measure is endorsed, to consider whether they'd be a repository for this information. I would consider myself the last resort, but I'd be willing to do it immediately.
Thank you.
This is okay. We had one other secondary reviewer, Paul Straczynski. Do you have anything to add?
Two quick things. Put this down to the simplest aspect. My question is, our goal here is to define variance of CT dosing, although I know that's not the ideal term, that's occurring in institutions, because right now that entire bandwidth and bell-shaped curve has not been fully defined. Is that correct?
Are you saying that? Is that the goal?
Correct.
Yes. Yeah,
that's my question. Is that
that's the goal within narrowly defined stratum that would make that information useful?
Okay. The other I have is related to disparities in care, and I'm an emergency physician. I do think that the metric overall has some impact related to disparities of care, because there's actually very strong evidence for non-English speaking patients who present to emergency departments have a significantly increased rate of imaging, including ionizing and CT. And so I think, although the metric doesn't specifically speak to that, it definitely alludes to the issue of radiation exposure in non-English speaking populations.
I think it would be tricky to add to the metric race and ethnicity, but not impossible. So, which would allow looking at that.
Yeah. Once again, it's not so much related to race and ethnicity, but more actually to non-English speaking populations, as there's fairly robust data in the EM world that population has
you just
a
higher image them more
of imaging.
I mean, I know I can't add that. I mean, that would be really great and really complicated. I will say we published a paper last month on head CT imaging rates in the emergency department setting based on – it was looking at the influence of malpractice on imaging rates. And based on race and ethnicity, the imaging rates were higher among Hispanic patients by a lot.
Otherwise, all of my questions have been answered by other members.
Okay, thanks, Paul. Are there additional questions or comments from committee members?
Yeah, this is Alan Levine in Washington, D.C. In the FDA email to you, Rebecca, they state as follows, I believe your proposal is a reasonable starting point for improving quality as long as it is part of a more comprehensive program. Could you comment on that in terms of what they had in mind?
The FDA has embarked on a series of activities to try to improve radiation safety. Most of the work that the FDA is doing is trying to reduce the profound outlier doses that I alluded to earlier. So more radiation overdosing rather than just high radiation dosing. So the examples of Cedars-Sinai where patients literally got the equivalent dose to three brain cancer treatments rather than a trivial dose of a single CT. So a lot of what the FDA is doing is working with the manufacturers to prevent essentially what I'll call machine malfunctions. It's not quite a malfunction, but preventing the machines from giving these extremely high doses, for having warnings in place. So the FDA is doing a lot of work there. The FDA also has called for the collection of the kind of data that I've proposed here at sort of the local level, and they have not sort of stepped up yet to be the people who would collect that data, but it's getting at what I think Iona may have mentioned, not just the collecting of this dose information, but the public reporting of it. And so I think, you know, the FDA is, you know, Jeff is saying that this metric by itself is not going to fix the issues of the really high radiation overdosing or by itself the need to report information. So I think he's thinking this is potentially one piece of the puzzle, and I've presented at the FDA several times about different ways that I think they could improve the puzzle, but I think it's their way of saying this would be one nice place to start, but it's not going to be all we need in this area of improving radiation safety.
Thank you.
Other comments? Okay. Alisa?
Yes?
We're, should we just do the category summaries straw vote on the phone here? Because we'll eventually have to officially vote on this electronically,
yes.
Is that right?
Yes, that's a good idea.
We'll just do the summary categories. Does that sound all right to the committee?
Yes.
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 Excellent. So then on 4410, radiation dose of computed tomography, we looking at the importance category. All those on the phone that feel that the importance criteria were met, please say yes.
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 Yes. Okay, good. Are there any no's? Thank you. Then in the scientific acceptability category, the criteria, this is the five-part question. Those that feel the scientific acceptability was completely met, please say yes. And those that feel it was partially met,
yes.
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 Yes. Yes. How about minimally met? None. And not met at all? Okay, so pretty uniform around partially. On the usability rating, the overall usability criterion, those that feel that that was completely met, please say yes.
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 Yeah, we got two of those. Those who feel that was partially met.
Yes.
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 Several.
Yes.
Minimally met. Not at all met. Okay, great. And then on feasibility rating, those that feel that was completely met. Partially met.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Several. Minimally met. Not at all met. Okay, then we get to the final point on this straw vote on those on the phone that feel the steering committee should recommend PSM 4410. Those that vote yes, please say yes now.
Yes.
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 And those that say no?
No.
Okay, we got one of those. All right. So we'll see how that comes out on the final electronic voting.
This is Iona. I just have one other comment about this question related to this measure and then the next one in terms of the registry. It strikes me we have another harmonization question.
I was just going to say that.
Yes.
We're going to be headed, I'm sure, for a harmonization discussion. You're right. I think we have to go through them each one at a time, though.
Okay.
This is Janet. Can I just ask a question then of Rebecca related to that harmonization question? Do you see these two measures as potentially a stepwise process, that if we were to start with the simple piece, that we could work towards the national registry?
I am in no way opposed to that. I would think that would be a good target. I am not sure how reasonable it is for the ACR to make this into a national registry, but I certainly would be happy to help in any way I could to make that happen, but it's an enormous jump.
Okay.
And so I think, you know, just like I'd like a Google Health record available on every patient that we could all easily access as physicians, I think that's a great step. I'm not sure that we're going to get there. I feel that way about the National Dose Registry. I want to say I don't think it has to be uniform to be useful. I think it could have partial participation and be very useful as well. So I certainly see it as a stepwise progression. I'm just not sure that it is realistic to expect that we'll be able to collect those data nationally.
Okay. This is Iona from Utah. I want to comment on that because we get ourselves into these situations because we have this urban, rural frontier division here. And so, for an example, hospital-acquired infections, we developed a report-light version here at the state, and some of our hospitals report directly to us, and then the more sophisticated, the IHC types of hospitals actually report directly to NHSN. And the definitions end up being slightly different. But we provide that as an alternative to some of our less sophisticated, you know, lower-resourced rural and frontier hospitals so that they can still participate in identifying healthcare-acquired infections, but they don't have to be at the level of sophistication that an NHSN might be. So I do see this as possibly complementary as a means towards an end. And I've also seen over the course of the last 10 years is once they start reporting on a fairly basic level and start getting information back, the desire for more detailed information grows over the course of time, and they actually move themselves forward towards more sophisticated reporting over the course of time.
I mean, I think that's, it sounds great. Once they get seduced into actually getting some information about how they're doing, they want more.
Yeah, and that's kind of what strikes me. You start with simple, actionable information at the local level, and hopefully it will lead to sort of a bigger national sort of registry. But I do think that jumping to a national registry, you know, right off might be not as feasible.
Can I just add one more thing that I didn't say before directly? A lot of CT machines are being purchased by non-radiologists. So I think more urology groups currently own CT machines that don't, cardiologists. And these are groups that are obviously much less connected to the ACR. I think CMS is requiring certification, so that might bring them into that group. But having a way that they could quickly come up to speed on some of the dose information among physicians who, you know, radiologists are not terribly knowledgeable, but other specialties are even less knowledgeable about radiation. I think that's an advantage of having a simple metric that, you know, that any small rural hospital can do, any small group with one machine can do, that I think would be really useful.
Dr. Binman, this is Lisa Thiemann, and thank you for saying that, because that's exactly my perspective on this measure as well, that in the comparison between the two, when you talk about a proprietary database, generally that requires some type of connection to that entity, and your measure allows for those providers who may not be members of ACR to still participate in this in driving quality and patient safety on this issue, because it's a terribly important area. And so the simplicity, it gets the information to the local level so that they can start making clinical decisions that are appropriate to drive care.
Okay. Shall we move on to 4310? Hearing no disagreement, we'll do that. 4310 is participation, and Rebecca, you may want to stay on the line. We will, we're going to be having a further discussion probably about both of these measures.
Sounds great.
You would. This is participation in a systematic national dose index registry. Is the developer on the phone?
Yes. Operator, can you open the lines for representatives from the American College of Radiology?
Yes, their line is now open.
Thank you.
Hello.
Who's here representing ACR, please?
This is Judy Burleson at ACR, but if Dr. Morin is still on the line, he is the one that would go over the measure.
Yes, I'm Rick Morin. I'm here.
Thank you. If you could just give us a brief overview of this measure from your perspective.
Sure. Before I do, in keeping with Dr. Conway's transparency, I should have mentioned that I'm also part of the ABMS PCPI working on many measures, and there's one very similar in the measures that are to be submitted to the NQF, hopefully very, very soon. I'm also a trustee of the American Board of Radiology and an officer in that for that group, and I also sit on the AIM advisory board that Dr. Conway mentioned earlier. So the dose index registry started in its inception in around 2004 to 2005. It was started originally to answer one question, and that question was, what is the average dose for a chest X-ray in the United States? And the truth is, we don't know. We still don't know, actually. And through that effort and two early pilots, we did discover that the dose indices, in this case radiography, varied by over a factor of 100 in just a couple institutions. So that gave us some idea that we should pursue some sort of a repository or registry in order to get at this this issue and what is the variance. During that time, largely because of the work of the NCRP and other groups, the attention was focused on CT, and we followed that lead and moved over to implementing a registry for CT. At that time, the dose indices that Dr. Smith-Beineman has been talking about were being calculated by the vendors, but they weren't being located into the electronic images. Each image has in front of it something called a DICOM header. DICOM is an abbreviation for Digital Imaging Communication in Medicine. It's a standard setting group that determines what elements have to be in an image in order for it to be felt to be correct by the National Electrical Manufacturers Association and other international groups. So having that information in the DICOM header was very important. So we partnered with a vendor to get them to put the information in there to prove that we could, in fact, collect this information. The methodology is the following. The image is at the CT console, and when that image is closed by the technologist, the image file itself automatically goes to a PC, which is running extraction software which takes out the dose index information as well as other technical parameters that Dr. Najee mentioned are in that header. Things that have to do with the quality of the x-ray beam, the way in which the scan was done, the name of the exam, so we know something about that. That's a very important feature. And those at the age of the patient, those kinds of things. Those things are extracted and then uploaded to the dose index registry. Now, the dose index registry is one of several registries that the American College of Radiology now has, which have already demonstrated great utility in terms of both patient quality and safety in things like extravasations and other areas of practice. So we then constructed another pilot of about 8 institutions. We discovered 2 very, very important issues. One is that the variance in CT across multiple institutions is huge. In fact, even within an institution, it can be huge. I won't go into the details, but easily factors of 10 to 40 were discovered. Once again, as I mentioned, that we are not measuring doses and we are not getting dose measurements. But these two quantities, the CTDI-Vol and the DLP, are measured the same way by everyone. And in fact, we typically do periodically check our own physical measurements made by certified medical physicists with the factory values. And they're always very, very close. In fact, here at our institution, they have always been certainly within 10%, usually within about 7%. And so the one thing good about this is that everybody's doing it the same way, so it is a very reasonable index to use in terms of the amount of exposure that the patient got. So the vision is that the registry will be used in the following way. A participant can deposit their information into the registry. It is done automatically, and then periodically can get a report on their dose indices compared to their region of the country, the zip code if they want to do it that way, or the entire country, or for that matter, the entire world. What that allows is that the quality committee or the safety committee of that institution or practice or however the structure is, the governance structure, that committee then can take a look periodically at their dose indices and discover whether they are 6 standard deviations above the mean or 2 standard deviations below the mean or the median or other statistical values that we'll be addressing in the future. So therefore, this would allow that participant or that institution to begin to optimize their exposure with regard to individual patient indices. Keep in mind that there's a real important feature here, and that this is not just to drive the radiation down, to keep on driving the radiation down. You still have to have an image that can be interpreted and make a successful interpretation. So it's about optimization, not just reduction. The problem is now that without a registry, even on institutions like the University of California, San Francisco, where my very good colleague Bob Gould is a very respected physicist, and I'm sure he knows all the numbers for their equipment, the issue is, are they high or are they low compared to UCLA or Mayo Clinic or any other organization? And so this would allow for the very first time organizations to be able to optimize the amount of radiation used for exams so that they can be assured and they can assure others that they are using a dose that is wise with regard to their imaging procedures. So I didn't get a chance to address some of the questions that were asked earlier by Dr. Conway, but what this means is that the audience for this particular registry and this particular measure, first of all, is the individual participant or their institution to optimize their practice. And that has a large effect on patient safety. So they would not necessarily report out the numbers to patients or anyone else, but they could certainly say that the radiation that's used at this facility is less than that used at in the southeastern United States or something like that. The issue of whether we when we designed it, whether or not there were standards, the registry itself is not to set standards. In fact, no registry is. What it does tell you is the state of practice. So it gives you more along the lines of something called reference levels that then standard-setting organizations can use. So these data are precursor data that allow standard-setting organizations to do that. ACR, of course, is one of them, but there could be others. And, in fact, there could be regulatory bodies that are interested in that as well. So what we are doing, though, is we are saying here is the standard practice in the United States. For a head CT without contrast, the average is 12 milligray plus or minus 43. It's that kind of thing. When we first were considering how to do this, to get at the idea back then we called it a repository, when we first talked about how to do that, we did deal with the issue of manual versus automatic. In studies that we did in Rochester and here in Jacksonville and that have been done in New York and in California, every time an investigator has looked at manual processes, it turns out that the error rate met in transposition of numbers and lots of other things is about 20%. Now, granted, you could argue that 20% is better than the 1,000% that we're off right now, but nonetheless, it's not something that, as it gets bigger and bigger and bigger in any given practice, it's hard to sustain. If we were to ask the two places which you could write it down, it's either at the console, technologists can do that. Compliance, when we tried to do that, turns out to be pretty difficult if you want literally every exam that's done. Because that's one of the big features of this is that by getting all the CTs, you don't have a bias towards how the selection process was done. If you do it by chart checks, you still employ people then, and you have this a very similar problem of the cost of doing such things. The other issue about CT scanners is that we have been in discussion with the four major vendors of CT scanners that represent approximately 90% of the marketplace. They are all on board. They are almost all doing structured reporting, and those that are not are putting the index information into the DICOM header. So we could either do it by using the new DICOM structured report that Dr. Najee knows quite a bit about, or for those older machines, we still have the methodology to extract it out of the DICOM header. And for those that don't put it into the DICOM header, there are at least two or three commercial companies that will be at the next big meeting for radiology the week after Thanksgiving, RSNA. They will be there demonstrating their commercial products, but there are additionally, we are aware of at least three or four institutions that are also making writing software to gather this information by what's called a screen scraping technology. But either way, it is doable to collect the information that way. And one of the institutions that will be joining our next pilot will be collecting older information in that manner. Now, the other thing is that has been mentioned, and I think it is important to mention that participation in this process has been reviewed and is considered to be a reasonable project for Part 4 of maintenance of certification. So there is another inducement for a facility or a participant to want to join the registry and do this because they will need to be satisfying Part 4.
Hello.
Okay.
So where we are now is that we have done an early pilot. The next pilot is going to be run it's underway now. We think it will finish in March or so. We shall analyze the data at that time, and if things look okay, we feel that we could probably open up the registry in the summertime. If not the summertime, then clearly in the fall. But sometime during this year, it will be available. There are people actually that are using the registry right now. They get a report back. They can compare their scans with other facilities and begin to make decisions. One of the big pushes that the FDA and regulators are doing in CT is there an active process of someone looking out over the radiation that's used and adjusting it appropriately? So this is a very, very important feature. I just close by saying the two biggest things that we found in the earlier pilots was, one, this tremendous variation of dose indices, indicating that there does need to be some national attention to occur on this particular issue. And then secondly, one that was very, very important to us, and that was that people don't call their exams the same thing. You might be able to get away with a head CT without contrast, but as soon as you move into the chest, abdomen, and pelvis, it's really difficult to be able to know which exams are which, and all places call them different. So what we are doing is we are harmonizing the we are harmonizing their descriptors of those exams, and that does get into the DICOM header, by the way, and that's how we identify the individual exams. We are harmonizing that with a standard that's been developed by the Radiological Society of North America. It's called RADLEX, and it has a list of terminology that is standardized. So at the end of the day as well, we're very happy to turn that back over to the facility so the facility can begin to standardize their terminology. So the facility gets several things out of participation. We have been, I don't want to say inundated. I'll let either Dr. Chatfield or Dr. Coombs go into more detail on that perhaps. But we certainly have a tremendous amount of interest. There are more people asking to join the registry than we wish to handle in the pilot, because we want to make sure the pilot is reasonable. It's already across three vendors. It'll be to four vendors as soon as the last vendor comes on board with the structured report. And so we are quite optimistic that this is a very doable thing. We are optimistic that it is useful and for facilities to begin to go towards more optimization of their procedures, and we're hopeful that in the long run it will begin to decrease the variance in patient exposures and CT exams, and then we'll be moving off into interventional radiology and radiography.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Morin. Our primary reviewer was Paul Nagy. Paul.
Thank you. So, Rick, a question I have for you is about the metric itself. The metric is just participation in the registry. I think I'd like to get some more clarification on what the precedence is for registry participation as a metric.
Maitri, could you address that?
This is Judy Burleson at ACR. I did want to sort of go back to Lisa's question about that in particular, and point out that the measure that we've submitted isn't participation in the ACR dose index registry. It's a systematic, multi-center, standardized data collection program that could be developed by other organizations as well. And there is also precedence of NQF-endorsed measures similar to that, to this measure, such as the STS registry, the participation in a registry of their sort. And those, there's several measures such as that included in the CMS inpatient quality reporting program. They have three structural measures, one on systematic database for cardiac surgery, a registry for stroke care, and then there's also the nursing sensitive care registry. That those are similar sorts of structural measures is what we're proposing.
And to add to that, in the presentation that we submitted, there are several examples of how simply participation in a registry results in quality improvement. There's one example from the SES registry showing decrease in mortality. There's an example from the Breast Cancer Surveillance Consortium looking at mammographers' performance in discriminating in their diagnoses. There's also an example on dose optimization from the Michigan CCTA registry. And these have been somewhat long-running, and for our registries within ECR, even for a very short-running registry for like 2 years or so, we've noticed performance improvement simply from having facilities participate and observe how they're performing relative to benchmarks.
Great. Thank you. Paul, do you have any other summary issues?
I do. So I actually agree with the
with others in their comments that these two metrics are highly complementary. I do feel that the real difference is one has it's, the difference for me is that one's got very good the registry has very good usability. The metrics are they provide a lot of granularity and they provide benchmarking so you can see what's going on. The challenge with the registry is feasibility in terms of the percentage of sites that can participate in doing that. I think it's a nice complement to the CT dose metric, which I think has got great feasibility. I think it's straightforward to do. I think it has difficult usability in what to do with the metric in terms of trying to be able to actually reduce protocol. And so I think that in those ways, I see those two metrics as being very complementary. I guess the question I have to NQF is we have other metrics that have been approved that are tied to this idea of automation of EMR automation to a registry. Is that correct?
Heidi, are you still on the line?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, we have several measures that are either, you know, derived from or their data source is electronic health records and registry.
And how do you address the feasibility issues with the low penetration of EMRs in the United States?
It's a good question. So, tough question, too. I mean, what we want to do is encourage the availability of the measures. So even though we know there may still be low uptake, if the measures aren't out there, then you know it makes it even more difficult. So what we do is work with the developers to specify the measure correctly. And if it's for an electronic health record, we actually are in the process of developing e-specifications and standardizing that so that it would – and that would then lead to – increased standardization of the data elements within, in the hope that as people there's increased uptake in registries and EHRs, that data is available. I mean, it's not the perfect thing, but the more we can do that, the better. So, is that answering your question?
It does. Well, from my perspective, EMR penetration in the United States is actually not that high compared to the what we call the PACS penetration, which is the EMR within radiology where the CT images are being stored and the DICOM data is being collected. So I think in terms of feasibility, I would say the feasibility of doing a registry based off CT dose would be far easier than doing one based off of the EMRs in terms of the – because even rural Iowa has their radiologists are all using – there's like a 90% penetration of PACS systems in the radiology market. And anyone who is looking at a CT study is actually using a PACS workstation to be able to do that is a challenge. So you're saying that the you work with the metric developer?
Yeah, and in fact, I mean, what we've been doing just recently is working on the set of measures that are were on the list for meaningful use, trying to take them from the traditional paper or claims route and specifying them for electronic health records. So, and the hope is that would become even more standardized and kind of an expectation for measures that come forward in the future.
Right.
So it is a process where we work with developers. I mean, I think at some point we'll probably be working with ACR. They have measures that are already endorsed and seeing if there's something that we can do to move that forward for them.
This is Iona. I just want to support that observation. DICOM been around for a long, long time as opposed to electronic medical record as a whole. And it was my understanding that the registry would relate directly to the DICOM as an interface type of opportunity for electronic reporting. So I think that the point that at least on the registry side, electronic reporting can be done fairly easily without a lot of burden, I think is reasonable. As I'm thinking through how a state agency might use this, for example, the piece that is appealing again about the previous measure is that it's putting the information into the radiology report, which makes that then available to both the patient and the primary care provider, et cetera. It's more information that's then being disclosed in that patient-physician relationship that can be addressed there as opposed to, I would see the DICOM reporting to the registry more of a population approach in terms of really getting a handle on this variation that you've so eloquently described, and is making me very nervous as I'm listening to it.
We share your
nervousness. We had a secondary reviewer of Paul Serzensky. Paul, do you have anything for us?
There's a recommendation in 282 about reporting time and variability, and you state that it can be reported monthly, quarterly, or annually for the numerator time window, but then you go on to say that it's best reported on an annual basis. Is it better just to state that it should be reported on an annual basis?
Yeah, the reason to say that was that we felt that what was said earlier, we've certainly seen in other registries, that once a participant or a facility gets the information about how their practice is doing, they all of a sudden want a lot more. And one thing for sure that we don't want to do is you don't want to be sending out summary reports too often, because they may get a view of the landscape that's not exactly correct. So we felt that the aggregate data runs would be done annually. That's a sufficient amount of time to see significant trends, and therefore it would be meaningful to see how the average dose index for a head without contrast was beginning to go down, or the variance was beginning to tighten from plus or minus 100% to plus or minus 5%.
Okay, thank you. Other questions or comments from committee members?
This is I did have one or two more comments to make. So I think the other thing that is useful to consider is that the average CT scanner does about 10,000 procedures a year. So there is quite a bit of data that you want to collect. And I believe the data to the registry is anonymized. I know we talked as a group about the downstream implications of this, and I know that there's a group in the NQF looking at the adoption of information technology for meaningful use criteria, and so I think this could be a potential candidate for that.
Good.
Good. Yeah, that's good.
Other questions?
This is Lisa. I have a question for Judy Burleson or Dr. Morin. Understanding that the measure itself is not proprietary, but the example that is provided, the ACR data registry. Now, it's my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, do you need to be a member of ACR in order to participate in the ACR data registry?
No.
Okay, that's the type of information that I think is important for us, for myself and probably other committee members to hear. That do you have to be a member of ACR? Number one, can you not be a radiologist?
Absolutely.
So in other words, you know, multiple providers could select to choose to participate in the ACR data registry.
That's correct.
Okay.
We have had a discussion among the steering group about the fact that how would this play out. We feel that the most likely thing that will happen is once this information is I'm quite sure that facilities that have low dose indices will find a way to market that. And the fact that all the radiology exams have some sort of a dashboard that might even be accessible to patients will therefore encourage urologists, orthopedists, and cardiologists that they should be doing something like that. The other thing is that in cardiology, they already have many active registries, and so the concept of joining a registry in that specialty has certainly been well established.
And I would agree with you. The standard for data registry is definitely, the precedent is out there, and the concept of data registry is important. My concerns center on the availability of this performance measure to a broad number of providers. And so that's really what I'm trying to get at and tease out, that there's really, what I'm hearing is that there's no exclusions for an individual or an entity, a facility, if they wanted to sign up with ACR's data registry to transfer information from their CT scanners. I'm hearing that regardless of the type of provider that may be involved in obtaining the CT, that they would be able to participate.
That's correct. And to address another issue that was brought up earlier, This data transmission is just over the Internet. There's nothing special technically about this, and I'm sure that even at the most rural of hospitals, they can access the Internet to do Yahoo or see their stocks or something like that, and this would essentially be the same way.
As an informaticist, this has to be an open standard of data collection, so that even the method of collection and transport, I think it's also very important that the data collected is being specified, is tied to an open standard, so any other registry can form and do the and collect the exact same type of data.
Could I ask a question about the public reporting possibility? So I get that a facility would know the distribution of dose on their patients, but would that information be provided at the level of the facility in any public forum that a patient or someone outside that facility could understand?
The public reporting would be the reporting that's done annually, much like every other, like a lot of other registries, and that will be aggregate data. Now, it will be broken down by, it could be broken down, in fact, by states or by regions. We haven't quite addressed that, but it will be sufficiently detailed to be useful.
For a patient to know if a hospital is doing a good job in dose or a facility, could a patient access that information at the level of a facility that's giving you the information?
Well, there's two things, Rebecca, we talked about this. One is, having the patient have access to the numbers is not very useful. That doesn't help too much. Whether the right now, participating in registries, and Judy, you can help me with this, but I don't think it's the policy of the college that they would take an individual institution's results and make that public. It's up to the institution if they want to publish that or not.
Okay, thank you. If we can move on, that's an implementation detail that our committee isn't dealing with today. Other questions from the committee members? Okay, should we move on to straw voting on this measure? Anyone disagree with that? We'll just do the categories.
You just said implementation. So the implementation is not, if a measure doesn't have the potential to have public reporting, that's not of concern when you consider a measure?
Rebecca, that's it's off the table for today. Thank you. You made your point. The registry, the measure PSM 4310 is up for straw voting. Our first category is the demonstration of importance of the rating, importance of the measure, I'm sorry. Those in the committee who feel the importance criteria have been met, please say yes.
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 Are there any no's? Okay, thank you. The next category is scientific acceptability. This is the five-part question on whether the criteria were met. Those who feel they were completely met, please say yes. Those that are partially met?
Yes.
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 Those that feel it's minimally met? Not at all met. Okay, thank you. The third is the usability rating. Were the usability criteria met completely? Were they met partially?
Yes.
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 Minimally? Not at all. Okay, thank you. And the feasibility rating, was the feasibility met completely? Partially?
Yes.
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 Minimally? Not at all. Okay, thank you. And then for the steering committee's recommendation on patient safety measure, what happened here? This is a misprint. I got 210. This the radiation dose index, 4310. This is the yes or no on whether we recommend it. The committee members who feel that the answer to this is yes, please say yes.
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 Are there any no's? Okay, then this this one is recommended as well. Elisa?
Yes?
Are you on the line?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Do we need to have the discussion of harmonization?
First, I guess you'd have to ask the committee if you felt that the measures were similar enough to harmonize. And you started talking about it before, but...
And if you'll recall, we had this just a few days ago. The definition is both the numerator and denominator are similar for measures that require harmonization. So I guess our first phase discussion is, are these distinct measures? Comments?
This is Paul Nagy. I was a principal reviewer. I have thought long and hard about that. I don't think they are distinct. I think they are distinct measures. I think they are kind of stepwise functions, I wouldn't want to couple them together that you have to do both of them at the same time. And that's usually the meaning of harmonization, right?
Or one or the other.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I guess it would be confusing to have both simultaneously. If one seems like a starting point, I'm concerned about simultaneously.
Who is that? Is that Rebecca?
This is Janet.
Oh, Janet, okay.
I think they're both good measures.
I usually stand at both places. Anyway. This is Lisa. I think they're actually distinct because one is a yes-no. One is actually specified as far as in data that's captured, even though there's data that's from the CT scan that's pushed forward to a data registry, and I understand that. But one is purely a yes-no. So the numerator denominators really are not similar.
Yeah, this is Paul Sudensky. Yeah, I would agree. The other is it really that you're looking at harmonization or the development of a suite of radiation dose measures with the option for selection of one or the other when a suite's developed? So I don't think harmonization is ideal here.
I support the suite approach. I think, again, as we talked about earlier, they are complementary and can be used for different purposes. It does strike me, however, that as NQF goes about releasing these new approved measures, that there needs to be some discussion in the release of these about their applicability, under what circumstances, for what purposes, so that the industry doesn't have a knee-jerk response that says, oh my God, they're telling us we have to collect two different measures in the same topic area, but the nuances of understanding those differences and why those differences are important has to be communicated along with the release of the endorsement.
Yeah, that's a good point. Elisa, can we assure that?
In the final report?
Yes.
When we go through the description of both measures, we will be able to put in all of the details, and hopefully it will be very transparent, the differences between the two measures.
Yeah, because I think if we agree these are distinct, we don't want 136 comments.
But I think even more important, I think we have to be careful in terms of embedding the differences in the details. I think the differences have to be put up front because, yes, a lot of people will drill down to the details and get that, but there will be a lot of readers that will just react. So if there's a way to communicate those differences in the upfront presentation of the measures, and then drill down for the more of the rationale for those differences, somehow making it much more explicit in the upfront communication, I think would be more useful.
Yes, be very good. Okay, other comments on?
This is Lisa. I would also recommend that the measure developers, given that Dr. Binman's measure is quote unquote a first step, as what's been kind of characterized, and then the data registry concept is a little further along, even though that the data registry is intending to ultimately generate similar types of data, that maybe make a recommendation for continued collaboration amongst these measure developers. That could ultimately, one could be subsumed by the other.
Other comments from the developers?
Well, I think we would be amenable to that.
I mean, I'd say up front that if the ACR was interested in using both measures, I'd be thrilled. So I think one is asking people to participate in the dose registry, and the other is asking for submission of data that will then be given out. I don't see how to harmonize them terribly well, but I certainly would be happy to have my subsumed by the ACR.
And this is Iona. Again, I want to emphasize that it was my understanding that the more simpler measure also then got translated into the radiology report and then was also made available to other providers in an electronic medical record mechanism, understanding the lack of penetration, but in terms of the future. And then that information then becomes available to the patient. It's part of the patient dialogue between the provider and the patient about that kind of exposure, the extent of the exposure, the risks associated with the exposure versus the kinds of treatments, et cetera, versus what I see from the registry's perspective is just population analysis, looking across the whole, the large, and saying, okay, if you're comparing by state, you know, what's the practice arena, the practice variation looking like in this particular domain? I do see that as different than what the simpler measure is also proposing.
This is Judy Burleson at ACR. May I say something?
Yes, please.
And Dr. Morin can probably describe this or explain it better than I can, but it is valuable to share the information beyond the practitioner or the institution. It is useful, as Dr. Benman was saying, to put that out to the patient or the treating physician. That's one of the ultimate goals. But there is some issues with understanding the information and presenting it in a way that is not that makes sense and giving enough information to act upon. So there's a physician consortium work group that Dr. Morin is also a part of that he mentioned earlier that is looking at dose optimization measures. And we had the same discussion about sharing information in the patient record and potentially what that group is looking at is a measure that does a cumulative or a rolling or a count of procedures that a patient had and putting that in their record, which is kind of a gross marker, a gross calculation, but it's at least giving information that can be understood by even the patient. Did you want to add to that, Dr. Morin?
No, I think that's I think the whole discussion of whether cumulative dose indices are of any worth at all is a very different discussion, and I don't think it's germane to hear particularly. But that is another way that's a different way of looking at things. I would certainly say that the goal of Dr. Smith Feynman's measure is slightly different than, or is somewhat different than the goal of the dose index registry, and it has to do with the comparative values and what they mean. And so I think that and I think that question is important.
Okay. We're at the point of sorting out whether these are distinct measures. Is there any other discussion on distinctness? Okay, maybe we should get a straw vote on that for the committee members. Those who feel that these are distinct measures, please signify by saying yes.
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 Anyone
yes.
feel that they're not? Okay, so we don't have to do harmonization. I think, Alisa, you're on the line.
Yes, I am.
There's a number of advisory comments here I think we want to be sure we capture, and two of these are, one is to somehow link both of these measures, and the other one was around public availability of information both for individual patients and for comparative consumer reports, and these ought to be, I would think, we could leave with NQF for developmental issues in the future.
Okay, we'll note that.
Is that a fair summary for the committee members?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I want to be sure I didn't miss anybody else's insight on this, but I think those two capture it.
Okay.
Okay, anything else on radiology measures?
Dr. Conway?
Yes.
I think we should open it up to
public comment.
I keep
forgetting that. Thank
okay.
you. Can we open up for the public comment?
And the public is now open if you do have a comment.
Maybe we should just read.
Are there member or public comments at this point? Okay, hearing none, we could move on. Lisa, you're on the line?
I am, yes.
Are you here for the duration?
I am.
Okay, all right, I'm going to pass this to you. I don't know when you joined, but we have not done any of the colonoscopy measures, and we left the epilepsy drug side effect measure at the following point. There were two requests that we accepted and one that we were in the process of trying to decide what to do. And that one is the request that the measure developer give specific examples of what a query and counseling were. The committee felt that the response wasn't adequate and specific, and we were at the point of deciding what we do with a conditionally approved measure where we're not happy with one of the responses.
Okay. Real quick question. Was the committee already able to go through PSM 025 and 26 with the HIV infection? I just wanted
no, they're
to
done.
They're done. Terrific. Okay. All right. So picking up where everybody left off before we went into the radiation measures. Alisa, I think we probably were looking for possibly some guidance based on Dr. Conway's summarization of where we were with PSM 010.
Yes, and I'll just ask the operator to see if there's a representative from the American Academy of Neurology.
And that caller's line is open. Please go ahead.
Rebecca?
Hi there. This is Rebecca Swinning. I apologize. I'm in the middle of a conference. It's a little bit noisy here. I'm trying to find a quiet location. As well as we should have two of our physicians on the line. I don't know if the operator can let me know if Dr. Christopher Bever or Dr. Nathaniel Fountain are online.
This is Nathan Fountain. I joined the call as well.
This is Dr. Bever. I'm on the call.
So we did not hear your earlier comments. We were told to join at 4:15 Eastern time. So if the steering committee would be so kind as to reiterate what was said earlier, I think we would all really appreciate that.
Dr. Conway, do you want to take that response just since I had walked in towards the tail end, or I can try and summarize?
Sorry, I missed that.
The question was a brief summary as to the steering committee's conversations regarding PSM 010 at this point. It's my understanding that of the three requests for changes to that performance measure, the first one, the numerator details, providing examples, specific examples regarding what demonstrated querying and counseling, the steering committee felt that the developer's response was not adequate at this point, and then concerning
okay.
the denominator statement and the clinical services, those changes were acceptable according to the steering committee's discussion.
Correct. What the concern was on the specificity of querying and counseling, it's an implementation issue. How would one really know that the patient was adequately questioned about side effects and or provided counseling? And I think the committee thought that the answer is that you would accept any discussion was continuing to be nonspecific.
Other things
any response to that?
Hi, this is Nathan Fountain again. And I guess the dilemma we have is that anti-epileptic drugs cause so many different side effects, it'd be difficult for us to specify which one. So that's why we purposely left it relatively vague, so that we could allow people to decide exactly what they were going to ask about.
Okay. Committee members have any questions?
Yeah, I thought also our earlier discussion
encompass the issue of whether this would be considered a normal part of...
I come back and forth like 14 times.
Right, normal part of routine care and why we needed a measure for something that they should already be doing.
Well, I guess the idea would be that although it should be part of routine care, it isn't necessarily. So among people with epilepsy, they would say that they are asked about this. In fact, there's already been some initial assessment of this measure, and this is one that isn't fulfilled as highly. So in other words, it, although there shouldn't be a gap in care, there actually is.
I guess this is Ione. I needed clarification on whether or not the gap in care is being defined by the lack of documentation versus lack of care. So the sort of the traditional way of charting is by exception. If a patient does not complain of any side effects, therefore nothing is entered into the chart, then is that going to be interpreted as the patient has no side effects or that the conversation didn't take place?
That's a good question. And there are, of course, always two parts to performance measures. One is whether it's actually performed. The other is whether it was just performed and not documented. And for this particular measure, we do have some evidence that it's actually not performed as well as not documented. Now, I think that the interpretation of the measure should be that if it's not documented, that it didn't happen. So we'd expect to... there'd be documentation that something happened. In other words, for patients on Depakote, a commonly prescribed anti-epileptic drug, we'd anticipate someone would say either, I suppose we could accept something as vague as no anti-epileptic drug side effects were present, but of course what would be better is that hair loss or weight gain, which are commonly attributable to Depakote, are present.
So in your evidence that it's not being done, how was that determined?
Preliminary data, but there's a website for patients with epilepsy, and the website developer asked among different performance measures patients whether or not it was being performed, whether or not their doctor, for instance, at each visit asked them about anti-epileptic drug side effects.
Okay.
And something only like 70% of patients reported their doctor actually did that at each visit.
Ask the question.
I think that probably represents reality.
And I understand that. On the other hand, my were these patients who were experiencing side effects. So, you know, if I go to see my doctor and I fill out my form at the beginning of the interview and it asks on my form if I am having any of those problems, and I'm not having any of those problems, I then don't bring that up in the conversation with the physician, as opposed to having problems and not communicating those problems or not being asked about those problems. I guess
I understand. I think we'd accept, I would think that we would accept any assessment of the problem. So if a patient did fill out, say, a review assistance form that included common questions for side effects of anti-epileptic drugs, which it likely would, that would be acceptable.
Right.
The problem is that right now, neurologists in particular wouldn't be likely to use forms to screen for them. And in a visit might not ask about it,
okay,
or apparently don't all the time.
Okay, so just to reiterate what you just said, so if in the form, the review systems form that the patient would complete, if a question was included from the neurologist's perspective, are you experiencing any side effects with your medications? And you know, if usually it's in the affirmative, please identify any side effects you're experiencing with your medication, and nothing is written down by the patient, and that would also suffice for this measure, which I think in an earlier definition, in the question was asked about including nurse practitioners and PAs, et cetera, and there was an agreement to do that to the extenders. Does that also then include the patient's report?
Well, I think we wouldn't care how the patient reported it. As long as someone asks the patient if they're having anti-epileptic drug side effects. And I guess there's two issues. One is about what's the minimum amount of documentation necessary, and the other is about what practice they should be fulfilling. So clearly the best practice would be for physicians to have a review of systems form and ask about a number of things that might or might not be related to anti-epileptic drugs. And then in addition, ask if they have any problems they would attribute to drugs and then sort out whether they did or not. but that would be a very detailed, specific way to go about it. So although that's sort of the common practice among epileptologists anyway, neurologists who take care of epilepsy patients, if this is going to apply to everyone, including non-neurologists, then it seems to me the minimum documentation would be that someone along the way, either through a form or in person, ask the patient if either, I guess we could say, are you having any drug side effects, but the intention would be to ask about specific questions related to common things due to anti-epileptic drug side effects, depending on the drug they're taking.
Okay.
Yeah, you mentioned the concern regarding noncompliance or part of the physician you found a 70% rate of compliance with this with checking for side effects. Do you know what the sample was?
I think it was 200. Yeah, I think it was 220 patients, but that's unpublished, unrefined data. It's just amazingly available for something so new is the reason I bring it up. But the sample for that was pretty substantial. But I think if you ask patients in general, maybe I should back up a little bit and just go back to standard practice or standard accepted knowledge for epilepsy patients. If you ask epilepsy patients, are you having anti-epileptic drug side effects, a remarkably high number of people would say yes, particularly sedation and fatigue. But yet that's not brought up in conversations regularly. That doesn't mean something necessarily has to be done, but patients report that as a huge problem. Even patients that have well-controlled seizures, this is a problem. And that's why it's generally applicable to all patients with epilepsy. So among the epilepsy community, this is sort of accepted standard that patients often have drug side effects that either we don't know about or don't address or that they think they have to have in order to control their seizures. The purpose of the measure is to get that assessed and not just assume one way or the other that it's happening.
Are there any other questions from the rest of the steering committee for the measure developers? Lisa, at this point, it sounds as if, is it the will of the steering committee? Do we feel that we have adequate, specific, detailed examples from the performance measures? Measure
Correct.
Developers?
Well, that's, I think, something that you'll have to determine. I mean, you could do another, there was sort of a straw vote a little earlier. But we are going to circulate another online survey so we can take another poll of that at that point.
So am I hearing that we don't need to make a vote here on the phone? Is that,
yes.
That Andrew?
Yes, that's correct. So they have provided some responses to the questions that you posed today. Maybe you can get a sense from everyone if those are satisfactory, if those address the questions that you had, and then the final vote will be taken via online survey.
Why can't we do a straw vote?
We can. We'll, it won't be official, though. The official vote will be done online, but... If you'd like to do a straw vote just to get a sense of things, absolutely.
Yeah, I would. If I'm the only one, we could pass on it.
Yeah, happy to do it. Is it – so at this point, we would be voting on whether or not the steering committee approves the performance measure as revised by the performance measure developer.
Correct.
In its current state now. Its revised state. Does the steering committee, do we have to go through each one of those sections or can we just do a final vote, Elisa?
You can just do a final vote.
Great, thank you. Does the steering committee feel that this measure should be approved for recommendation to the NQF membership? Yes? No?
No.
Nope. Okay. The straw poll appears to be zero yeses and several noes. And then we'll follow up with an online vote to confirm on this measure. All right.
Can we ask for any input on what kinds of things? I kind of feel like I haven't done an adequate job of providing an explanation. Could we ask for some clarification of the kinds of
This is Iona. I'd like to respond to that. One of the struggles we've had as a committee is that we're the Patient Safety Steering Committee, and I think the standard for patient safety is different than a quality measure. This strikes me individually as a quality improvement measure. The case for patient safety is really looking at harm or death as a result of something not occurring or occurring. So it, from my perspective, it didn't rise to that level of that standard. And we're given a yes-no option as opposed to recommending it to be a quality improvement standard or measure or recommending it for a patient safety measure, et cetera. So we have to... I feel like it has to rise to that level of seriousness and that the evidence supports it to take it to a patient safety standard as opposed to a quality standard.
Yeah, one other thing that would help you, Lisa, is that you certainly did a fine job. It's an intrinsic problem with measures like that that are more like practice guidelines and may be better kept in that domain rather than a publicly reported safety measure. So you could not have done a better job.
Okay.
So don't feel bad.
No, just trying to understand what the nature of it is, and I think that clearly explains it. We could make an argument for why it would be safety, but it wouldn't fall into, I understand why you would think it wouldn't fall into a clear
right.
Death or a serious problem on a routine basis. Thank you.
Thank you. So now moving on to the other measures that have been revised at the steering committee's request. We'd be moving on to, Lisa, do we need to stop in between and open up for public comment since these are from a different performance measure developer?
We could, in the interest of time, do that at the end. And I think we have the measure developer on the line, and we'll pull up the recommendations from the steering committee and the developer's response.
Great. Terrific. And who do we have on from AAAHC Institute?
Ron Gable.
Hi, Dr. Gable.
Hello.
In looking back at the committees, we have the three performance measures from AAAHC Institute, PSM 0, 14, 15, and 16, all having to do with colonoscope. Related issues, PSM 014 is colonoscope processing, personnel instruction, 15 is processing currency, and 16 is processing competency. And at the request of the steering committee, the steering committee made three general recommendations or requests to AAAHC in making revisions to those measures. The first one was to consider pairing all three measures together. And Elisa, correct me if I'm wrong, but the developer's response was that they've added that measure, that information to each of the individual measures, that they can be paired.
Correct.
And they would be happy to allow NQF staff to make edits if needed where something might have been missed that reflects that intention.
That is correct.
Any questions concerning from the steering committee for Dr. Gable regarding the AAAHC's willingness to do that? Not hearing any. Going on to the second request on behalf of the steering committee was for AAAHC to look at how they would operationalize the word current in the context of annual processing personnel instructions and recommend that they remove current and also add an addition that they that if there's any changes in equipment processing protocol, that personnel competency should be reassessed. And in reading the developer's response, they've attempted to remove the word current from all descriptions of the three measures and have added the wording, as well as whenever any changes are made in colonoscope equipment or in manufacturer's recommendations to these measures as well. With the same caveats that if NQF staff find any edits that need to be made consistent with that, they have the ability to do so. Does the steering committee feel that AAAHC's changes have met the steering committee's requests?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Any questions on this, on these changes? Not hearing any?
No.
I'm just going through these, I think. on the third request, expand the population to also include office-based practices, whereas previously the measures were restricted to ambulatory surgery centers or ASCs. It appears that AAAHG has attempted to include office-based practice or OBP, using that acronym. And similarly, any place that NQF staff need to make those edits consistent with this intention, they have the ability to do so. Does the steering committee feel that that met the steering committee's request?
Yes.
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 Any questions for AAAHC on this last point? Not hearing any. Any questions or comments for Dr. Gable generally regarding this, other than from the steering committee? Thank you for the willingness to respond to the steering committee's request for changes. Any other additional comments, concerns? All right. It appears that there's no comments. So, Alisa, I think we can move into straw polls for approval.
Yeah.
Okay. Does the committee feel that we should? Preference? Then hearing no preferences, why don't we do them all three together as an all up, down, unless somebody wants to pull one out? Nope. Okay. So does the committee approve that we should recommend PSM 0, 14, 15, and 16 to the membership? Yes?
Yes.
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 Yes. Any no's? I believe that's a unanimous.
So all three. You should have come in earlier, Lisa.
Hey, I had the easy part. Alisa, do we need to open up for public comment at this point?
Yes.
And then, okay. Operator, will you open up the lines for any NQF member of public comment, please?
And the lines are now open.
Do we have anybody in the queue?
We do not at this time. The lines are open, and it appears no one has stated any questions or comments.
Okay. Thank you very much. So, moving on to recap next steps, it appears.
Yeah, and this is Andrew. I'll just sort of make a few remarks here. In terms of next steps, as we've mentioned a couple of times now, we will be sending out a survey, an online survey, for you to do your final recommendations on each of these measures you've talked about today. And so we'll be getting in touch with you about that via email. We'll be sending more details and the link for voting. I should say, again, another reminder about the HAI measures we're postponing. I think maybe, Lisa, you may not have heard this, but we are going to wait until December 1st for that ACS-CDC meeting before making any final recommendation on those HAI measures or the SSI ones in any event.
Great, thank you.
Sure. Is there any more details?
Yeah, Andrew, is there an option to abstain on any of the measures, or do you have to vote up or down?
You may abstain if you feel that would be more appropriate.
Okay.
And then as just in closing, I would like to just thank all of you again for your perseverance and fortitude in going through all these measures, all these conference calls. And I wanted to mention that we will be very shortly starting up another project, what we call a maintenance project for safety measures. That means we'll be considering already endorsed measures that have already been endorsed by the National Quality Forum. And each of those measures goes through a maintenance cycle every 3 years is what it's set at this point. And we take those measures up again and put them back through the evaluation criteria, evaluate them as if they were a newly submitted measure, evaluate them against those criteria again, and just sort of take stock of things and see it. And the measure developers submit new information if applicable,
and you know, we just sort of see if we want to continue endorsement or retire the measure or discontinue endorsement. And we would be delighted if any of you would like to continue your service on that committee, and very grateful for your service. So we'll make another request for that, you know, via email. But just something to consider if you are interested in continuing your work on patient safety measures as a steering committee member. We will be requesting your service if you're willing. So we'll follow up with you on that, but just something to keep in mind as we move forward here.
You may want to take a guess at the time commitment on that one.
Yes, and we'll get more details to you on that, and you know, we'll follow up.
Same pay scale?
Yeah.
I'm afraid so.
Andrew, this is Lisa. I'd like to, before we get off, I would like to, if there's any remaining NQF members or performance measures on the line, I would like to thank them for their time and efforts in creating and vetting forward these performance measures as well.
Thank you.
And I'd also like to thank NQF staff in doing a great job.
Yes.
Very good job.
And thank you, too, for doing a marvelous job as well.
Okay.
All right.
Great Thanksgiving.
Does that mean we are adjourned?
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Okay.
Yes, happy holidays, everyone.
Thank you. You too.
And that concludes today's conference. We thank you all for joining us.